welcome to episode 124 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
We have a double review for you this week. We are talking about the movie Swiss Army Man and also Hunt for the Wilder People. First up is Swiss Army Man. Christy, you have that one.
All right, here's the plot synopsis for Swiss Army Man. A hopeless man stranded in the wilderness befriends a dead body, and together they go on a surreal journey to get home. Yeah, that's totally the plot of this movie. So this is the one everybody heard about at Sundance, is the farting corpse Daniel Radcliffe movie where his farts make him a human jet ski. And like, if that premise sounds interesting to you, you're going to love this movie. I love this movie. I've been writing about it for months before I finally got to see it. I actually got to, like, pose with the fake dead Daniel Radcliffe before I got to see it. And by the time I sat down for it, I was like, man, I really hope I like this movie because I am invested. And it's actually just so fucking strange but adorable. It's directed by the Daniels, who are a music video directing team of Dan Kwan and Daniel Scheinert.
They're best known for the Turn Down for What video, the Lil Jon one with the guy dancing.
Yeah, well, the guy dancing where, like, people go ass first through floors and stuff. It's weird video. So if you've seen that video, yeah, those guys. But what's funny is this movie is gross, but it's like, I feel like the farting thing is overblown first off. There is a lot of farting in, like, the first 10 minutes, but then they move on to poop metaphors and things, and it's fine. No, but it's like, I'm not one who's, like, huge on gross out humor, even though I'm the one that loved Wetlands. This is nowhere near that kind of gross out. This is less gross than, like,
Neighbors
2.
So I can see it, basically.
You totally can see it. This is actually less gross than Neighbors 2. It's more like that they talk about poop and they talk about farts, but not the whole way through the movie. Most of the movie is really about this man, played by Paul Dano. It is tricky because there's Paul Dano, the Daniels, and Daniel Radcliffe. Paul Dano plays the man stranded on the island, and he's very lonely, and it's kind of like his need for a friend brings Manny, this dead person, slowly back to life. And he starts telling Manny about what the world was like and like, you know, tries to bring all these things to him. And my favorite part of the movie is probably a section where he basically Swedes reality, where if you ever watched Please Be Kind Rewind, where they, like, created their own really janky versions of movies, he does that for movies but also for life. And so he, like, builds, like, a bus set. And I just love the imagination and the kind of childlike wonder of all that. And just, frankly, the weirdness of it all. And the relationship these two build is much more complex than you would expect from the goofy premise. And by the end of this movie, I had laughed and I had cried and I had, like, chuckled so hard that I had embarrassed myself. Like, I just think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the premise is really weird. The first 10 minutes are really weird. But, like, one of the things that you come away with is that it's not actually just gross out humor for the sake of being gross out humor. It's not just like, hur, 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 farts are funny. Like, it's not that kind of thing. It actually, one of the things that this movie is really very much about is kind of the things that, kind of the really, like, ugly or disgusting parts of you that you hide so that you can fit into society, like, and you know, the way that we hide these things does kind of create distance between people. So it is, like, there is actually a point to why this movie is embracing, like, farts and vomit and boners and, like, all this, like, really gross stuff.
It's actually, yeah, there's, like, a line where Daniel Radcliffe's character says, if my best friend is hiding his farts from me, what else is he hiding? And it sounds ridiculous, and it is ridiculous, but in the context, I actually, like, at that point, I, like, literally did that thing that they do in movies. It's such a cliche where you, like, touch your face. You're like, am I crying? I'm crying. I'm crying over farts.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds ridiculous out of, like, you know, even right now, I've seen the movie, and I'm like, that sounds dumb, Chrissy. But, like, it really does work in context, because that is kind of what it's about. Like, so so Paul Dano is, like, a regular human, but Daniel Radcliffe is a dead body that, like, it's hard to explain because he is dead the whole time. It's not like he, like, is, like, comes back to life, but he kind of, you know, the body gets a little bit more animated as the movie goes on. And one of the things is that he doesn't remember that much about what life is like. So Paul Dano keeps having to explain it to him. And since Daniel Radcliffe's character really doesn't understand life or society or, like, any of those regular rules, like, Paul Dano keeps having to explain things to him. And you really start to see, like, you know, just, like, so much, how much pain there is in, like, he in his inability to kind of show off or embrace the parts of him that are gross or sad or weird. Like, all the stuff that you can't tell people, all the stuff that you have to keep from other people to make them comfortable. Like, so it really is, like, kind of this, like, touching, heartbreaking relationship between these two characters. And Christy, I know you're gonna want to talk about this. Daniel Radcliffe, so Paul Dano is very good, but Daniel Radcliffe in this movie, honestly, it is an exceptional performance. I know it sounds so strange to say that the best performance by Daniel Radcliffe I've ever seen is when he plays a dead body, but I don't even know how, like, it's a lot of physical comedy, but it's also that he has this, he somehow incredibly manages to pull off the trick of being, of looking dead the whole time and also seeming alive. So Christy, take it away. I know you have something to say about this.
No, totally. I wrote a piece for IndieWire where I basically said that this is Daniel Radcliffe's Revenant, in that, like, it's a part that requires him to really shake up our image of him. Instead of him being some kind of, you know, sweet British boy, he's this gross, like, quote-unquote sack of shit, and, like, he's always looks dead. It's always kind of jarring. And he doesn't have the access to his body for most of the movie. So, like, he has to perform almost entirely through his face and at times through, like, an impaired voice because Manny is learning to speak again. And there's, like, a lot of obstacles. There's a part where he has to sing. There's a lot of parts where he has to allow someone else to manipulate his body. And, like, he has to trust so much in the filmmakers and in his scene partner and completely reject his ego to really get into this character. And I actually got to interview him, which was really cool. And the way he talked about it, I said, oh, so it's like karaoke. And he was like, yeah, it's not about how well you sing, it's about commitment. And I wrote for IndieWire about this, and I just think that, like, if the Oscars didn't have such an intense genre bias, he would absolutely be a contender this year. Of course, he won't be, because they're not great at recognizing comedies, but they're even worse at recognizing stuff that's weird, and this movie is devotedly weird. And I've said in my review for Pajiba, it is a love letter to weirdos. It is very much about that moment in time where you as a freak find your people, and gobble, gobble, they accept you. Like, it is that moment, and for me, that made this movie so special. And honestly, right now, I think it's my favorite movie of the year. I am obsessed with Swiss Army Man.
I actually don't consider myself to be that weird or that much of an outcast, but I feel like this movie kind of gets to the part that everyone has, because everyone, like, no matter, even if you're very popular and you have tons of friends and whatnot, like, everyone has these things that they're like, if people find this out about me, like, even if it's not, like, anything, like, you know, like, scandalous. They're like, well, if people find out this about me, I'm fucked. Like, people aren't going to love me anymore. So I feel like this really gets into that. Yeah. And I feel like... So one thing that I wrote in my review from Sundance is that, like, we've talked about how the Daniels did Turn Down for What, where it's just about, like, this guy who's, like, dancing with his crotch, and it's, like, really, really weird. But when I saw Swiss Army Man, I was like, it makes sense to me that these are the same people, because it just kind of, it's about embracing this, like, your weird, freaky side, especially, like, you know, the kind of a masculine, weird, freaky side, and just kind of letting your freak flag fly.
Totally.
Well, now you guys make me wish that eventually my screener will come through, because I do kind of want to see it.
I
now.
Absolutely want you to see this. And once you have, we'll revisit a little bit, because I'd love to know what you think. It's weird, and I totally get that it's weird. It's not for everyone, but for me, this is just it's just fucking awesome.
I will say
you sold it pretty well.
I will say if you'll watch the opening of the movie. The opening is aggressively weird. If you're like, I can't, then you won't like it. But if you can,
it might be good that you. It might be good that you have warned me of that, because I feel like, because I am aware, I will be more open-minded, and yeah. I will make it past the first 10 minutes.
I did know we needed to warn you, because I made you watch Wetlands. Like, it's nowhere near Wetlands gross. Like, no.
I'll tell you.
If you Wetlands have, is a 10,
you
this
have
is like
sufficiently
a 2.
Scarred me for life. I will never, ever forget that movie.
Everyone go back and listen to our Wetlands review. It is still one of my favorites.
Boy. All right. So the general consensus on this is to see it. Anything Absolutely. Else you guys want to add before we move on?
Go on.
All right. So movie number two this week is Hunt for the Wilder People. The IMDb synopsis for that one is: a national manhunt is ordered for a rebellious kid and his foster uncle who go missing in the wild New Zealand bush. Yeah, A+. I like that one. So this is the new movie from Taika Waititi, who's doing the new Thor movie. He directed What We Do in the Shadows, and holy shit, he is just a freaking fantastic director. I am not a Thor the Dark World hater, so I like Thor, but I am so excited about the idea of what he could do for that series based on what he did in this movie. This was just the sweetest, most delightful, charming, like, it's just so different. And that kid, Julian Dennison, he plays Ricky, the kid that
He's a bad
the
egg.
Aunt and uncle, the foster kid that the aunt and uncle have to take in. I'm sorry, what'd you say, Christy?
He's a bad egg. That's bad egg for the rest of us.
I wish I could imitate that. Oh my God. There's just so many lines in this movie that are absolutely hilarious. So many mini moments in this too that are connected to the big picture, but almost feel as though they can function as little shorts all on their own, and you can watch them out of context and still enjoy it. And it's got a really nice character journey and totally. Meaning to it about Ricky and his uncle coming together. And this is a must-see movie. There's a reason this thing has, I think, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And it's
this
actually
is one of those
now
movies
like
where
most...
I don't understand why anyone would dislike it for any reason.
It's the most successful film out of New Zealand.
Like, ever, box office-wise, or...?
I believe so, yeah. Like, and that's counting, like, a film produced in New Zealand. So, obviously, it doesn't compare to Lord of the Rings, but those were American movies shot in New Zealand, so everybody settle down. But, like, what I love about this is that the way they introduce Ricky is that Ricky is introduced by a social worker who says he's a bad egg, and they do this montage of him being a bad egg, and it's like, the stuff he does is such juvenile bad stuff that it's like, you can't really hold it against him. But Ricky believes he's a bad kid. Like, whenever they ask him what he wants to be when he grows up, he's, like, saying a gangster and stuff because like he's been told he's a bad kid and he's kind of like rolling with it and he's like my best friend is Tupac and you're like what are you talking
he
about?
He is so funny. This movie is going to have an endless list of memorable quotes. I would want a t-shirt of something he says in this movie.
I sing the song Ricky Baker Happy Birthday to
myself.
Oh
my God.
I feel like this movie like it feels a little bit like so when I saw it at Sundance, the thing I immediately thought was like I'm so excited for a generation of kids to grow up with this movie because it feels a lot like the kind of movies that like we watched as kids and that we love, like kid adventure movies. It's not that it feels like a throwback or that it just feels like stale or old because it does feel really fresh, but it does kind of have that like sense of adventure. And one of the things that it has that adventure, it has that humor, but one of the other things that it does really well is that like there is a real sense of danger and a real sense of sadness to what you're watching. So you get very emotionally invested. Like it feels like reading like. This is probably kind of offensive because it's like it's actually based on a book by someone whose name I don't remember. But it to me, as an American who hasn't read books by this author, it feels a lot like reading like a Roald Dahl book where like, you know, yeah. And like in the movie is actually like broken up into chapters. So it really does feel like you're reading a book. And it's just like when I watch it, it's like I'm not usually one to be like, oh, the children, you know, are our future or whatever. But I was like, I'm so happy to think about like a bunch of little kids watching this movie and this being the movie that they latch onto.
Totally. There's one part like also where like Ricky gets to be a real kid and I like that a lot. Like he has a dog that he cares about and there's one part where they're stuck in the bush and to amuse himself Ricky builds a Walkman out of like vines and twigs and it's like a totally fictitious Walkman. It does not have music, but the way they introduce it is that he is full on dancing with this Walkman as if it's real. And then he turns to Heck and they cut the music and he's like, you won't try my Walkman? And like, Sam Neill looks so annoyed at this child. And like, it's funny you say Roald Dahl because Sam Neill is basically like Gene Wilder in like the first Charlie and the Chocolate Factory where you get like, you know, he doesn't like children. And it makes it so much more fun that like he gets stuck in the bush with this super excitable child who is like super pampered. And at one point he like walks up to Heck, like they've been lost in the woods for like 10 minutes. And he walks up to Heck and he's like, I've run out of toilet paper. Give me yours. And he's like, what? Like I didn't pack toilet paper. And he's like, don't, come on, share. And he's like, just use a leaf. And like, he's like, what do you mean? And like, everything about their interactions is just so, it feels so authentic and yet so silly. And then the woman who plays the social worker is amazingly funny. When she talks about how she's like the Terminator and he's Sarah Connor before she did chin-ups. Like, I can't. It's too
Going
good.
Back to Sam Neill, though, it's so nice to see him in a movie like this. I can't remember the last time I've seen him, like, actually give a performance, you know? Or maybe it's just because I haven't seen very many of his recent movies. I feel like the last thing I saw him in was, what's the vampire movie called?
That he was in? Was in a vampire movie?
Yeah, the one with, Daybreakers with Ethan Hunt. Ethan.
I completely
forgot
that was a movie.
Ethan Hawke. I'm watching too much Mission Impossible. But yeah, I think that's the last movie I've seen him in. And I watched Jurassic Park.
He's been doing a lot of TV.
Many, many times. But yeah, he's so good in this movie. It's really weird to me how you could, I don't want to say not like Heck, but he's not like the warmest guy, clearly.
He's a gruff guy.
There's... there's just enough like sensitivity and heart to him that never takes away from that aspect of the character, but at the same time gets, like, even from day one when he clearly is not warming up to Ricky at all, still makes you root for them to come together. And so much of that is serviced by the, I can't remember, Bella, the aunt, Bella. She has such a sweet, sweet relationship with Ricky in the beginning. I mean, that first act.
I also love, like, that Bella's no pushover.
It's so happy.
Like, Bella, what? Bella really respects Ricky, and, like, she gives him his space, and she, like, there's, like, a really sweet speech through the bedroom door where she's kind of telling him what's in the room and what's his and whatever. But then she also gives him a hard time.
There's so many
little
things.
He runs away that night.
And, like, their conversations are just, they're just such unique ways to discuss those topics and to hash out their issues. You just don't see that in very many movies. And Waititi also does such a good job making such, like, you just brought it up with the Walkman, making such little props and little details feel important throughout the entire movie. Like the hot water bottle.
I was just
going to
say the hot water bottle. That kills me.
What like a smart way to introduce that and make sure that it stays important. And oh, it was such a nice little touch.
Like, I can't believe that there's like, it's very much like the fart line from Swiss Army Man, where there's a moment with this water bottle where I got really emotionally invested about it. And then I felt silly, but I was like, but it's just, I'm very attached to that water bottle.
It makes you think of, like, you know, something of the sorts that you're attached to, yeah, and how it would feel if you didn't have that the same way anymore. So it's just, it's a very specific, unusual situation, but there's such, like, big, broad ideas and topics that anyone can relate to. So it's easy to connect to what he's going through here.
Well, you brought up Swiss Army Man, and one of the ways that I feel like it's kind of similar is that one of the things that's really sad about this movie, that, like, it's not a sad movie, but there is kind of an undercurrent of, like, you know, it's poignant. And one of the reasons why is because the thing that Ricky and Heck, as different as they are and as much as they can't really stand each other, have in common is that they are two people that society has just decided we have no use for these people. Nobody wants them. They're not useful to us, like, no, like, no, like, they just have no place in this world at all. So then it is a movie about them kind of finally finding a place in the world with each other. And
totally.
So in that sense, it's kind of reminding me of Swiss Army Man, where it's just like two people that are just, like, you know, they're nothing, like, nobody wants them, they've been discarded, but then there is something beautiful about watching them come together.
Yeah,
it's a really, really sweet movie, but I feel like because it's so good about, like, making it feel like these characters are actually in danger and actually, like, you know, have a lot of emotional depth, it does, like, it's really sweet, but it feels really earned, like, at the end, because, like, you've seen so many kids movies where it's like, oh, two people are arguing, but then they become best friends, and you're
sure,
like, whatever.
Well, this isn't goofy in that sense at all. You definitely get the feeling that something terrible could happen at any moment. They do a really good job at including threats that feel real, but without too much of a malicious nature that you're actually, well, yeah.
But you do feel like something bad could happen.
Yeah, like, they're living in the bush, so there's wild animals. They're being chased by the police and social services, so there's that threat. There's other hunters in the area that are, like, looking for them in a bounty. There's a lot of threats, but it's, like, it's in a way that makes it feel exciting and not scary. And what I really like is that because it's Taika Waititi, and it doesn't feel like, it feels like, the broad strokes feel like a Hollywood movie, but then the specifics feel very Waititi, where they're just, like, a little strange. Like, there's just, like, you think you might have a beat on this, and it's, like, unless you've watched his other movies, you really aren't going to predict, like, where are these jokes and where these things are going to go. And it's just kind of wonderful. And, like, he's in it for a little bit as, like, a priest, and he brings back a lot of people. Like, if you've seen Boy, there's some of the same people from that. And there's, like, a really great, I don't even want to get into who he plays, but Rhys Darby, who was in Flight of the Conchords and What We Do in the Shadows, is in this, and he's so funny.
Like, that one section of the movie shouldn't work at all. It should be too weird and off the wall.
It should be too weird.
It's so funny.
It's not, I've watched Hunt for the Wilder People now three times. Like, I think this movie is just fucking fantastic. It's so sweet and funny and weird. And, like, yeah, it does feel a little bit like an 80s throwback, and not just because it kind of has, like, a Goonies, like, story, but also because Taika willfully shot it that way. And, like, it has, like, zooms and kind of static scenery and stuff. So it's supposed to evoke that. But it doesn't feel dated. It just feels like, it feels like an homage. But, like, Ricky is such a character. Like, I've never seen a movie that has a character quite like Ricky. And, I mean, he's such a lovable dummy. Like, But he's not a bad kid, and he learns things, and like with him, like with Heck and him and Bella, everything seems so great. So then when things are disrupted and he ends up in the bush, like, because you've seen that moment of bliss, you really want that back for him. And I think that's what grounds the movie and makes the rest of it so enchanting, is that you want to find him and Heck to find happiness.
Yeah, that's really well
said. I'm choking
said.
Angie up.
No, it's just like, yeah, I saw this movie at Sundance and I was like really tired, and I just saw this and I was just like, this is just what I needed. It just makes me feel so good. But yeah, so overall, like, I guess we should wrap up soon. Overall, yeah, it sounds like everyone is like, yeah, watch this.
Oh my god, I can't recommend this movie enough.
I can't either.
It feels like we've had such a good string of movies that we've spoken about recently.
Well, this is partially like, because these have both opened a little bit ago, but they're both expanding, and it was kind of like we missed them the weeks they opened, and we wanted to backtrack because they're both great and they deserve attention, so...
Absolutely.
While we're at Comic-Con this week, you guys can enjoy this, and then next week we'll tell you about whatever happened to Comic-Con.
So clearly, high praise for these two all around. Go see them. And on that note, that is a wrap on episode 124 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Go on over to iTunes where you can subscribe, rate, and comment, and then you can go to popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at popcornprosecco. We are on Facebook where you can like us, and then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, you want to go first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the interwebs, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And I am on Twitter and Instagram at PNemroff, on Collider.com and the Collider Videos YouTube channel. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Ricky Baker, happy birthday. Once rejected, now accepted by me. And Hector, we're a trifecta.